You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the turn it up to 11 NBA playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. The NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
Welcome to the Bike Radar podcast, brought to you by the team behind BikeRadar.com, Cycling Plus, and MBUK magazines. If you enjoy this episode, please subscribe. And if you can do so, leave us a rating on your podcast provider of choice. It really helps us reach other cyclists like you.
Hello and welcome to the Bike Radar podcast. I'm Jack Luke, Bike Radar's deputy editor, and today I'm joined by Bike Radar's digital writer, Nick Clark, who has just finished a 9-way drop post test, and by Tom Law, Bike Radar's video presenter over on our YouTube channel, who is a man who knows a lot about drop posts. And today, if you haven't guessed already, that is going to be the topic of our podcast. We're going to be covering what a drop post is, why you may use one, the key buying considerations, and as mentioned, Nick Clark will be giving his findings from his latest test, which ran the full gamut of scores from 5 stars all the way down to 3, and the full gamut of price points too, from £220 up to £750. And he'll be giving us an overview of the best and worst of drop post tech today. We'll start with the main man in question today, Nick Clark. How are you this morning?
Really good, thank you. How are you?
Oh, thanks. I'm great. That's very generous of you to ask back. Have you been shredding much in these wonderful early spring-like conditions?
Yeah, it's been a heavy weekend for me.
Wonderful. Tom Law, how about you? Have you been getting shreddy amongst the daffodils?
There's not been that many daffodils. It's been quite wet, as is the case at the moment in the UK. But yeah, no, I'm good, thanks. Had a few shreds. Even got out on a curly-barred bike as well over the weekend, which felt very peculiar.
Well, we want absolutely nothing of that today. We're all about
We're all about the shred.
Precisely. So we're going to dive straight in. Now, we don't want to assume any knowledge. It's a toxic trait in any kind of publishing. So we'll kick things off with the most basic point. Tom Law, what is a dropper post?
Well, in most basic terms, a dropper seat post is, as the name implies, a seat post that you can drop out of the way. Now, these are either controlled by a remote on the handlebar, which is most common these days, or you can get some still that have a little handle under the lever, so you look a bit like Michael Jackson when you're dropping your post out of the way. But yeah, most of the time, they are operated by a remote on the handlebar, and they are becoming pretty ubiquitous on modern-day mountain bikes and even some gravel bikes as well.
Yeah, I don't want to stress the point too much, but if you're struggling to visualise such a thing, imagine an office seat but with a saddle on the top
instead.
Going up and down.
That is the basics of a dropper seat post. They are office chairs for your bike.
Exactly. There's lots of like all sorts of complex stuff about how they differ from one to another. The designs are quite complex, as you'd imagine. However, we'll come on to that in a moment. Nick, why would someone want to have an office chair for their bike? Why have dropper posts become, as Tom says, ubiquitous in the world of mountain biking?
I think the main thing is just to get over that rear wheel, especially, you know, it's the way most of the riding happens sliding back, weighting up the rear end. It's much more easy to get around the bike with a post out, with the saddle out the way. And being able to not stop to put it up and down is pretty important, I think.
Fond memories of being 14 years old and coming to the top of any track, backing off my Manitou, the preload, because I didn't know what preload actually did, but I thought I'll back it off, make it really soft, and then dropping the seat post manually. Of course, you wouldn't have had to deal with that, Nick. You would have had dropper since day one.
I didn't. I was on a quick release first time. Oh, I know. Yeah. And also I had that cross-country background as well, which is, I don't know, shunned still by some, the dropper post, but less so now.
Yeah, that's a good talking point, in fact, just before we kind of go on to the drawbacks potentially of droppers. But droppers are most commonly used on enduro and trail bikes. You don't really see them in downhill bikes as they're not required. You know, they are always, the saddles are out of the way. And in cross country, they are somewhat adopted, you know, not entirely in kind of the shreddier end of cross country racing. Perhaps more progressive riders have seen the benefits of droppers and will use them. But I'll talk about it in just a second. The key drawback of dropper posts is their weight.
Yeah, and it's something you can't necessarily get around, but I think it's worthwhile having the dropper post rather than not having the dropper post. I mean, we look at BMC's new four-stroke, it's literally built into the frame, which obviously makes the weight of the frame a little bit heavier, but obviously the engineers and the racers have come together and decided that it's worthwhile having it rather than the extra grams on the uphill.
Yeah, so primary drawback being weight, but the benefits in terms of control, comfort, everything else, generally speaking, for most riders, dropper equals good, unless you've got very long legs like me. I like a bit of old school high posting, but maybe just for the attention.
And you can still shred with a high post
stop,
as well.
Tom, stop. well, on to how does a dropper seat post work, Tom? I mean, I realise you're going to have to make some quite broad generalisations here, as with anything in bike tech, there's a broad gamut of how things are designed. But at its most basic, how does a dropper post work?
So effectively, it is a bit like one side of your suspension fork hidden in your seat tube. So you can pull the remote on the handlebar, or you can pull the lever under the saddle, and the saddle and the post will drop out of the way. So it's basically a tube with the inside a tube with a cartridge filled with oil and air inside, and it'll basically drop out of the way. And then when you push the lever, it'll go back up to your predetermined saddle height.
One thing that's worth noting, if you haven't used a dropper post before, in fact, I think maybe a handful out there, but almost all dropper posts require you to actually weight the seat in order to drop out of the way. They're not sort of like a two-way action. I don't know how you would describe it, but they don't drop out of the way. Are there any options on the market which do
BMC four-stroke would be the only thing.
Four-stroke would be the only one. Mm. Yeah, where it will actually drop itself out of the way automatically without you having to put your body weight on it. So again, it is very much like an office chair. You know, if you pull the lever on your office chair, it's not going to go anywhere unless you put any weight on it. But if you don't have any weight on it and you pull it when it's already dropped, it'll go back up. So literally just imagine an office chair, and it's the same basic principle.
Now, in terms of like suspension, you have different travel options for dropper posts from, you know, 20-30 mil seen on sort of gravel bikes, pointless, all the way up to 200 plus millimetres on big shreddy enduro bikes. Nick, what would be your guiding principle when someone's asking how much travel do I need on my dropper seat post?
This episode is brought to you by State Farm. You might say all kinds of stuff when things go wrong, but these are the words you really need to remember. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. They've got options to fit your unique insurance needs, meaning you can talk to your agent to choose the coverage you need, have coverage options to protect the things you value most, file a claim right on the State Farm mobile app, and even reach a real person when you need to talk to someone. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal.
Listen to The Deal on Spotify.
The NBA playoffs are here, and we all know playoff mode is a thing. Listen to the evidence. Playoff crowds are going wild. Playoff players are lighting up the court. Even your speakers are in playoff mode. Okay, we'll take it down a notch, but just a notch, because this is the Turn It Up to 11 NBA playoffs. Playoff mode is clearly a thing. This is what you love about playoff basketball. The NBA playoffs presented by Google Pixel continue on ABC, ESPN, TNT, and NBA TV.
If you can get Travel Adjust, I'd probably say that's something to look for. I mean, it also gives you the variety, well, the ability then to keep the post if you're switching bikes, which, you know, a lot of sort of mid-end bikes not necessarily come with a dropper post always. So that's something to look for. At the same time, it's something that you might have to swap out, because it's, if you're taller than maybe the frame designer has decided the bike needs to be, then, you know, you're going to have to get a bigger post, unfortunately. But that makes getting an upgrade more important, I guess.
So the kind of, what are the primary benefits of having longer drop versus shorter?
The saddle's more out the way, I guess. Mm-hmm. Or you can have your saddle less in between your legs, which is the main thing. Although, if you're going for little T-bogs, then you've got nothing to hold on to.
Tom, what would be your kind of opinion on this? What is the right amount of travel for a dropper seat post?
For me, I think you should always try and fit as much in your frame as you physically can. So obviously you will normally have a set amount of seat post set above the top of the seat tube of your bike for your required saddle height. So for me, it's all about figuring out just how much you can fit within that space and also within your frame as well. A lot of frames have interrupted seat tubes or curved seat tubes, so you can't always insert the seat post fully into the frame. Although things are getting better, people are realizing that they want longer dropper seat posts and as long as they possibly can. So a lot of bikes now, the seat tubes will be straight, so you can really get a massively long post in there. I mean, back when it was in like the rigid post days, you perhaps get like a 350, maybe a 400 millimeter long sort of seat post. Nowadays, some dropper posts are touching 600 mil in length overall. So they are massively long. So you've got to make sure that you can fit all that in your frame. So they're the two considerations that I would say are the most important, just how much you can fit physically inside the frame and how much you can get above the seat tube up to your required saddle height.
On that, you quite often will see stack height quoted for a seat post. Nick, what does that actually refer to when we're talking about stack height?
Sort of from where the clamp is for the saddle and then how high the saddle will be then. So that sort of like shim on top of the post would be the stack height.
Seal head, yeah.
So that kind of determines how far you can put your post. It sort of, there was a bit of an arms race to make the shortest stack dropper seat post possible because, you know, 20, 30 mil does make a not inconsiderable difference to the overall drop of your seat post, but it does enable you to have a bit more flexibility with how far in or out you kind of want to run your dropper post. And you mentioned travel adjust just there. Explain for the uninitiated what you meant by travel adjust with this dropper seat post.
So a lot of posts come with the infinite travel adjust. So in the case with like this KS Vantage that I've tested recently, it's got a screw at the top which will allow you to infinitely adjust by 1 mil to how, you know, to make sure it's the right height within that range. So I think it goes from about 150 to 180 mil. So you can pick any measurement within there to make sure you've got the ultimate extension. And in that case, I'd probably go for the slightly longer end of it. So then you can always cut down if you can't go up. And then also some of them, you replace the pins inside, which again, very similar system, but maybe not quite as easy.
Just to put you on the spot, how, when you say you adjust it, are you adjusting a sort of bolt? What's happening internally?
If you've got a cut-through saddle, it's much easier because there's a bolt just on the top head and you can turn through it. If not, it's saddle off and a tape measure job.
Had you any ideas, Tom, what's actually going on inside when you're fidgeting around with that bolt? So I'm putting a really techie question in front of you both quite cruelly.
Yeah, I mean, even though I've done a video on Nick's dropper seat post test, which will be coming to the channel shortly, I didn't have too much time to play around with the KS Vantage that he's talking about. But yeah, with 1UP's one and some other ones on the market, they have little metal pins that you basically put in, which effectively act as a travel limiter and drop the post down within its travel range. So it's a nice and easy system to do. You don't require too many tools to do it. A lot of them are tool-free. You just need some grease and some basic knowledge to get it done. There are others that you can't adjust the amount of travel. And there's also some that you can adjust infinitely between their range. So on all of the posts, I believe, Nick, you could adjust them anywhere between all the drop possible and 0 millimeters in terms of like how much you would actually drop them.
With, I think, a lot remotely. Of the cable operated posts, that would be the case, but a lot of the electronic ones are sort of set to their limit.
Yeah, set to their limit, yeah. And you've got the Fox Transfer SL, which is either all the way fully up or all the way fully down. There's no in between.
Have you ridden one of them, Tom?
I have, yeah. It's not the most fun thing in the world. Like, it is very light, although 1UP's new V3 is getting close in terms of weight. But yeah, for me, if I'm picking a 200 mil travel dropper post, I want to be able to put my post anywhere between that sort of range.
I think especially on electric bikes as well, where you sort of drop your saddle for a little bit to get
and,
up the hill.
And technical climbs as well. You know, I do love a technical climb fest. I'm weird in that sort of sense. And it is nice, rather than feeling like really perched on top of the bike, that you do just want to be able to drop it, you know, 15, 20 mil, just so you've got a little bit of extra leeway if you, you know, sort of slip a tire and you need to put your foot down and have a bit of a dab. It's nice to have that there, which, again, the Fox Transfer SL doesn't allow you to do that. It's either all the way up or all the way down.
I've been known to change my saddle height when I'm wearing particularly thick padded bib tights, so that sounds awful. You touched very briefly there the kind of split between electronic and cable operated droppers. Droppers are absolutely no different from everything else in cycling. The proliferation of electronics continues apace. And while there have been electronic dropper post options for many years, I think Magura were probably the first main one to bring one to market. We now have ones from RockShox, KS has mentioned, and there's definitely others on the horizon as well. So there's a bit of a split, I would say, in design philosophies, but cable operated definitely dominates the space. I'll ask you both in turn for your kind of hot take on this. Nick, I'll begin with you as a man who's just tested all these posts. Electronic or cable operated, weighing up the pros and cons of each, what would be your choice?
Money no object, I think I'd probably go electric every time. It can be in two bikes. So, you know, I like the Reverb I've got at the moment, I'm sort of putting across two bikes now, which has cut the cost in half, possibly, depending on how you look at it. But the actuation is just much quicker. You don't have to worry about cable routing. And there's a lot of benefits to it on the other side of things, though. They are slightly heavier. So if you were looking for something maybe for an XC purpose, I'd be more reluctant. At the same time, I think it's certainly the future.
And they did also cost you £750 for a Rockshox Reverb, which is quite a lot of money.
It's true. That's why it's the money no object. But at the same time, I think hopefully it'll trickle down to all dropper posts. Like, we expect most of the electronic gubbins to come down. It just makes it a lot easier.
We'll come back to cable routing because you poor hands had to do so
still,
much.
Still
of
healing.
It's from the testing. We'll come on to cable routing. Tom, I want to hear your hot take on this.
Yeah, I thought I was in the same camp as Nick, being a fully wireless kind of guy, but I've actually spent a lot of time on a cable-operated post recently, and I do still quite like it. And it's difficult to justify the extra expense of a wireless dropper post. I mean, I'm lucky enough to have a Reverb Access. It's great. It's brilliant. But then when a one-up post costs like less than half as much, and it's just as good, and it's easy to service...
It's true.
It's, you know, it's really difficult to justify that extra. Like, it is super, super clean, especially if the rest of your bike is wireless as well, which my bike handily is. You know, the cockpit looks super clean with just your brake hoses out the front as opposed to the rat's nest that you can sometimes get elsewhere. But, you know, unless you've got the money, personally, I think I would go for a cable one at the moment.
It's on cable routing. Let's come on to that. So in the early days of dropper posts, when they were first coming to market, they were very much viewed as a sort of niche option. And externally routed dropper posts were the norm then. So the cable would run from your handlebars down the outside of your bike up to normally like a cable stop on the collar at the base or the midpoint of the seat post. They are still on the market for bikes that don't have internal routing, but they are very, very much in the minority. Nowadays, most cable-operated dropper posts have dedicated routing through the frame and they kind of feed into the bottom of the dropper post. Nick, what is the good, bad and ugly of cable routing on dropper posts? You just had to do 9 of the damn things.
Yeah, well, thankfully it was only 5 that were cable.
Well, that's very true.
But at the same time, it was difficult and it became a bit of a faff. And then back-to-back especially, it was quite difficult. But it's one of those things, once it's in, it's in. And once you've got the housing in, I mean, I'm very lucky to find that the cable routing on the inside of my long-term Ferrari LaSalle Peak is fully lined, so it was just a push-in, push-out type of jobby. But, I mean, there are some frames that don't have that, and you're there trying to, like, pick it through, especially if it's the first time putting a dropper in.
My transition spur being one of them.
No roosting at all, no guiding inside.
There is for the gear cable on that bike, but not for the dropper seat post. And as much as I love it, it nearly ended up in my neighbour's garden when I had to replace the cable. It was a nightmare. And I know Tom Marvin has similar stories when he had a transition long-term test bike as well.
He is a man with potatoes for hands, though. So he's less likely to be as delicate as you are with dropper post routing. But you know, things can be complicated further by dropper posts in the early days. And I think with many still, the cable clamp, so the actual section that you clamp, is often at the seat post end, which you can imagine is a complete nightmare. Some of them will instead swap the arrangement around, so you have the cable ferrule or the pear-shaped... What's the end? Cable
nipple.
End? Nipple, that's the word. Nipple at the end of the cable on the dropper end and the clamp at the lever end. Do you have a mix of those in your test, Nick?
Yeah, and I found out there's a name for it, universal mounting direction, which seems to make sense.
Oh, what does that say?
The bike industry has decided on something universal.
Well, apparently, apart from one on the test, which was, you know, slightly lower end, so I can see why it's gone that way, and it gives a lot more adjustability for the lever, but at the same time, it reduces the options for aftermarket levers, which is, you know, I guess we want to upgrade and make your bike look a little bit more fancy, then a bit of a hurdle.
So universal mounting direction being the nipple being at the dropper end.
Correct, and then clamped at the lever.
So much easier, so much nicer. On dropper post levers, you mentioned that there's a lot of aftermarket options out there. Is there any kind of considerations for compatibility, like cable pull, or is it a bit of just a mash the cable and the thing will move up and down, Tom?
Yeah, there are some levers that will work better with some posts than others, like Wolftooth Components, for example, do a light action one, which works better, supposedly, with some dropper posts than others. But I found, generally speaking, yeah, you can pretty much run any lever that you want. As far as a cable-operated post goes, obviously with wireless, it is different. But yeah, like I use a number of dropper post levers with different posts. You know, you can interchange brands. Like I've got a 1UP post with a Brand X remote. I've got Vice Versa. I've used the Wolftooth ones. I've used PNW ones. So yeah, you can generally mix and match, which is a nice thing, you know, because some levers, as Nick's found out, aren't always that brilliant. That either come with or the brand suggests. So it's nice that you can choose a potentially better lever or one that you find better yourself if you've already got a post.
Before we go on to the sort of the good and the bad and the highlights, the lowlights, whatever of your test, Nick, something I wanted to clarify for the audience, a bit of a misconception, not too commonly held with dropper posts, but they're quite often misconstrued with suspension seat posts. Now, suspension seat posts are different. They are, as the name suggests, something that lets your seat post move up and down for a little bit of rear-end squish on a bike with no rear suspension. Am I right in saying that there are a handful of droppers in the market, possibly more in the gravel world, that offer a small amount of squishiness at the top of the dropper post travel optionally to improve comfort?
Yeah, so I think the Reverb Explore has a little bit of suspension built in, which I think is actually a really good idea. And I would like to see that maybe brought over to the mountain bike side of things, especially for, you know, climbing on the e-bike. I think that'd be really good. Mm. You know, sometimes if they're getting a little bit booked and you're thinking maybe a little bit of cush would be nice right now.
Cush for the touch.
No doubt some of our listeners will already be claiming that their post, which is a bit lacking in the maintenance stakes, already has a bit of that suspension built in.
Yeah. Oh, maintenance. That's something I didn't have in my fastidiously pre-prepared podcast notes. Let's go on to that then, actually. So maintenance-wise, Nick, what can you expect from a typical drop post? Like, how often do I need to service them? What does that actually involve?
It will depend on the brand, but usually 20 hours, I'd say, is probably a good go. And then there's two ways of servicing. I mean, some of them will have a release valve, which will get the air out, the extra air built in, and make sure that sort of bobbing squish isn't really developing. But at the same time, you need to do a full seal service at some point. And again, like with forks, it's a time spent and how much it's been used. And also, I mean, if it's been stored as well, the seals could be perished. So it's very much similar to suspension in that sort of way.
20 hours doesn't sound like a lot. Is that really what you would do if it was your own drop post, Nick? Or would you be more like 150 hours? Because that's what I would do.
Mine would be seeing some love at some point.
Tom, would you agree with Nick's advice there?
Yeah, absolutely. So I kind of treat my drop post like I would my suspension. So I try and get them serviced once a year. Like 1UP's post, for example, I think is really good because you can just undo the seal head and basically add some fresh grease around the bushing, and it does basically make them feel like new. And you can just replace the whole cartridge in some of the posts as well. You know, like I know there's a brand called Wintec. They don't actually make their own dropper posts, I don't think, but their cartridges are found in a lot of dropper posts. So you can just replace the whole cartridge. Not the kindest thing for the environment, obviously, but they are quite easy to just whip them apart with a couple of Allen keys, pop a whole new cartridge in, and then the post is basically good to go again. So as Nick says, it depends from brand to brand.
And it's probably better than buying a whole new post.
Exactly, yes. Cheaper.
Relatively easily recyclable, one would think as well, a cartridge in there. But on to your test then, Nick. So you tested 9 dropper posts. Dare I ask you what those posts were? Do you have your notes ready and waiting, or do you know off the top of your head?
I'll give it a go. So Reverb Access, RockShox, Magora Viron MDS V3, an X-Fusion Manic, a Crank Brothers Highline 11 dropper, which is a carbon shaft, PMW Loam dropper post, a TransX EP01 wireless dropper, which was the cheapest wireless dropper post on test, the KS Vantage, as I mentioned earlier, KS Lev Circuit, which is KS's first electric seat post, electric dropper post, 1UP V3 dropper post, which I think was one of my favorites, especially with the cable actuated, and then the RockShox Reverb Access was also in the mix.
Interesting. Quite a broad gamut of stuff. You know, we're not talking like mega budget things in there. I think the cheapest dropper you'd realistically want to buy, I think on our list, is like £70, I think, on our best dropper post list. I'm starting talking off the top of my head. But still, you know, you've got a good range of prices there from about £220 through to £750. So I'm not going to make you talk through each post in turn, but which was the best? Which was the best electronic and best cable, and which was the worst of the lot?
The best cable operated one was the 1UP. That was just, I think, it's a really well-refined product. It works really well. And, you know, I know from the past, like with the V2, how easy they are to service, and they're keeping that sort of same simplicity, which is really cool. And I think as a brand, it's one of those that is more catered towards the home mechanic rather than the shop mechanic. Not to say that it's not as easy for the shop mechanic, but you can definitely work on it at home. The stack height was really low on it as well, which meant you could get it completely out of the way, more so than a lot of the others, and even the electronic ones as well, which was good. And the RockShox Reverb was my favorite electronic one. There's something about it. It's just an incredibly polished product. The tactile feel of the remote's really good, and it's instantaneous, which I didn't find with all the electronic actuated posts.
Okay. Well, I might grill you on that in a second. And then low lights wise from the whole group test, what didn't kind of hit the mark for you?
It was a quick callback, but the Magora Viron, I mean, the ergonomics are really good on it. It feels really nice, and I think it's a well-presented post. And it's really, it's light compared to some of the other electronic posts, but it's just really slow to react. When you upgrading from cable, which is near instantaneous, well, you've got a little bit of throw in it, but compared to that, it's worse than a cable operated post, I'd say.
Okay, interesting. Tom, you had a little you did a video on the basis of Nick's test. Is there anything you would kind of add to Nick's findings there?
Yes, I mean, I say I've got the 1UP and the Reverb Access on my own bikes, which made filming a lot easier because I already had those two set up. So I have had a lot of time on both of those posts, and yeah, I've got to agree with Nick. Like, the 1UP, I think, is the best all-round dropper post on the market at the minute. The V2,
bloody hell, 1UP's getting a lot of love in this podcast.
1UP is getting a lot of love in this podcast. Yeah, it's not quite as good value as the V2 because the price has jumped up a little bit, but it's one of the lightest. It's got the shortest stack height, the most amount of sizes in there as well. Like, you can get it from a 27.2 and a 90 mil, which you can adjust down to 70 mil of travel.
27.2 being the diameter,
Yes, the diameter. Yeah. So that will fit, you know, old school bikes, even some gravel bikes as well, if your bike's got the internal routing for it, all the way up to a proper big boy, 34.9 mil diameter, 240 millimeter of drop. So it'll fit pretty much any bike out there. The remote's really nice as well.
Yeah, I really like the remote.
The remote is outstanding. The new V3 remote, which Alex Evans reviewed, so you can find the review for that.
A 5-star, I think, site. As well.
5-star, yeah. Rare from Alex Evans, a very fussy young man.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, for me, the 1UP is head and shoulders above anything else.
I think it's the weight as well of it. I mean, it's so yes. light. It's compared to even cross-country specific dropper posts, it's, you know, hitting above its pay grade. I mean, compared to that Crank Brothers, which is, you know, trying its best to be as lightweight as possible with titanium bolts and a carbon shaft, I think it's about maybe more than 100 grams lighter than it, which is quite significant.
So the 1UP is lighter than the...
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
What was the Crank Brothers one like to ride? Like, as far as I'm aware, is that not one of the only carbon shaft droppers on the market?
I think it probably is. Mm-hmm. Can't confirm, but of the list I've been given,
it's
for sure.
The opposite to the KS Lev carbon, isn't it? That has a carbon outer tube, so the bit that goes into your frame. But the Crank Brothers one flips it.
Yeah.
So it's the actual inner tube that goes inside the outer tube, which I've always thought that, like, carbon fiber going up and down, grinding against the seal.
And when I was initially riding it, you could definitely feel a little bit of grain as you were going down. At the same time,
for its low friction properties, carbon fiber. No,
especially with a matte finish. Plug.
Necro, a very good opinion piece about how he hates matte paint jobs on bikes, which we'll put a link to in the podcast description. It's a very funny listen, but I won't let you digress.
But no, I mean, I don't think it's not something I would pick necessarily. At the same time, I wasn't against it. I mean, after a while, I got used to it, but it didn't add to it. I think if you've got a matte bike and you want to match it, I think it looks really good. But at the same time, I can only imagine the small imperfections collecting dust over time. But I've not tested that, so it'd be hard to say.
Unfair to say, yeah. So with that, the carbon shaft on sort of a fixed post bike, carbon is generally preferred for a fixed seat post as it allows for some fore and aft wiggle, improving comfort. Was there any degree of sort of wibbly-wobbly compliance in that seat post?
Don't think there's any built-in.
Really?
It's more just a aesthetic thing, I think, more than anything.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. That's kind of not, I really imagined, it must be a big chunky chunk of carbon then if it's not moving at all, which is possibly why it's heavier than the one up. There we go. Any other sort of standout, you know, either through performance or just oddness posts in the test for you?
Yeah, the KS Vantage, I think, was probably the best sort of value winner. So it's 1699, and that is just for the purse, so you will have to buy a remote, but you know, you get the choice of shopping around for a remote to pick any aesthetic colour for your bike,
which we definitely recommend.
Yeah, it's fun. Buying stuff's fun.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But at 1699, it's probably one of the best posts I've tested for that reason. I mean, it does everything you'd expect it to do, and this, you know, the side-to-side wobble doesn't develop over time. I mean, I think I spent a good month riding that on off, and it felt really good. Nothing developed.
Great. Final question for me. This is a real pet peeve of mine in the world of seat posts. Were there any truly evil ones in terms of saddle adjustment and the clamping arrangement? It is so easy to get saddle clamps wrong on saddles. So I'd be keen for you to dish the dirt there.
It's hard to say. I think the side clamps are probably the easiest ones to put on. That is.
So the ones that are sort of like ears that clamp in as opposed to two separate clamps.
Exactly. Other than that, no, I think they were all pretty well designed. I mean, I'd say the X-Fusion was probably the less refined. But at the same time, I wouldn't say it was the end of the world. But I have had some posts in the past where you're fiddling with two Allen keys trying to make sure it just tightens up together. And, you know, a massive dollop of Loctite just put on right at the end of the thread. So you can't even get it in if you want.
Yeah, like the one-up's quite... I'm really torn with that because it's nice that it has like little captured nuts. So they have a flat edge on them so that the nuts themselves don't move and don't spin. Which, like Nick's saying, it's like when you've got a big chunk of Loctite on a bolt and it's just on a round thing that sits in the top, like a round nut. Oh, it's a pain just to try and like get it all held together and tighten it up. But then the flip side is I did find it quite difficult with the one up to actually get to the bolt at the front of the post as well sometimes, unless you've got like an angled you know, sort of Allen key, you know, with a ball end on it, it's quite difficult to get to. So if I have one criticism of the one up, it would be that the head design is good in one respect, but
I thought it was nice and narrow as well.
Yeah,
so it was easy to get through the rails, but at the same time, I do know what you mean. It can be,
yeah,
but it's like with anything, I mean, it's one of those tasks I think no one really wants to do, and it's a sort of set or forget type of jobby. Yeah. So
the reverb access is the best though, in my opinion. I'm not normally a fan of seat posts that just have like a center bolt going through the middle, because you can literally, like, for me it's just a recipe of just if you put your weight too far back, it's just gonna point to the sky. But there's a secondary bolt on that which also controls the tilt of the post as well, which is quite nice. So as soon as you take the saddle off, when you put it back on, it's at the same angle you left it at before. It's great. So you've only got to worry about the fore and aft adjustment, which is a lot easier than trying to get the saddle at the right, you know, you spent hours dialing in your saddle angle.
It's not sin free though, because it's a mix of Torx and Allen key.
Criminal.
Yeah, I know.
Banished it. Rim 101 type things. That.
Yeah.
The only other thing that I did notice that, I mean, I like the KS Lev. That was, you know, I'd say on par with the RockShox in terms of actuation speed. However, the remote, I don't know if anyone's seen it, but it's sort of like a plastic sort of lever belt into it. And I've seen pictures on Instagram of people just completely tearing it off with a shoelace, like, you know, walking past their bike and just snapping it off.
Oh, God.
So it's one of those things I'd definitely keep a lookout for. And I imagine KS is probably thinking of a replacement, maybe.
Okay, interesting. Yeah, on seat post clamps, I'm a big Thompson seat post fan. I like Thompson seat post. And I can't speak for experience with their dropper, but I have their fixed posts on lots of my bikes. And their clamps are very, very solid. But my God, they're a pain to fit. They are such a pain. But I'm kind of with you, Tom, with the single bolt through and the sort of ear style one. I've bumped saddles up and down when I've had a hard landing, or like on the road even, if you kind of sit after a horrible effort out of the saddle, kind of you're pointing right to the sky or down to the front of the ground. But anyway, interesting stuff, Nick. So this dropper post test, we're doing our podcast today. It's going to be kind of teased out into the site in the next couple of weeks and months. We do have our full buyer's guide and best list for our previous dropper post tests in the podcast description. And of course, that will have the best of Nick's test in there in short time. In the meantime, thank you very much for listening to the Bike Grader podcast. Nick, Tom, thank you very much for joining me and letting me grill you on all things dropper. If there's any other questions you want answered about droppers or any other tech questions, send those through to podcast@bikegrader.com. And don't forget, we have our regular Q&A series, which will be soon making its way onto the website, where we can ask any question or answer any question for you, no matter how nerdy or in-depth is required. Nick, Tom, happy shredding. Thank you for listening.
See you.
Thanks for listening to the Bike Radar podcast. If you've not done so already, please subscribe and share with your friends, or leave us a rating if you've enjoyed this episode.